Silvertop Associates, Inc. versus Kangaroo Manufacturing, Inc. An opinion by Thomas Hardiman. Read by Mike Overby for Amicus Lectio. If you'd like your scholarship read on this podcast, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at Amicus Lectio or at Lethargilistic. Silvertop Associates, Inc. v. Kangaroo Manufacturing, Inc. An opinion of the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit before Judges Chigaris, Hardiman, and Goldberg. Opinion by Thomas Hardiman. This interlocutory appeal involves the validity of a copyright in a full-body banana costume. Appellant Kangaroo Manufacturing, Inc. concedes that the banana costume it manufactures and sells is substantially similar to the banana costume created and sold by appellee Rasta Impasta. Yet Kangaroo claims that Rasta cannot hold a valid copyright in such a costume's, quote, pictorial, graphic, and sculptural features, under Title 17 U.S. Code, Section 101. This dispute presents a matter of first impression for our court and requires us to apply the Supreme Court's recent decision in Star Athletica LLC versus Varsity Brands, Inc. We hold that, in combination, the Rasta costume's non-utilitarian sculptural features are copyrightable, so we will affirm the District Court's preliminary injunction. Section 1. This dispute stems from a business relationship that went bad. In 2010, Rasta obtained copyright registration number VA1-707-439 for its full-body banana costume. 2 years later, Rasta began working with a company called Yaguzan Incorporated, which purchased and resold thousands of Rasta's banana costumes. Yaguzan's founder, Justin Legary, also founded Kangaroo, and at all relevant times was aware of Rasta's copyright registration in the banana costume. After the business relationship between Rasta and Yaguzan ended, Rasta's CEO, Robert Berman, discovered Kangaroo selling a costume that resembled his company's without a license. Rasta sued Kangaroo for copyright infringement, trade dress infringement, and unfair competition. After settlement discussions were unsuccessful, Rasta moved for a preliminary injunction, and Kangaroo responded by moving to dismiss. The district court granted the motion for a preliminary injunction and explained its reasons for doing so in a thorough opinion. It also dismissed the unfair competition count. Kangaroo appealed, but because the district court had not entered an order detailing the injunction's terms, we granted the parties' motions to remand for the limited purpose of entering a corrected order. The district court amended its order, and the injunction is now ripe for review on appeal. Section 2. The district court had jurisdiction under Title 28 United States Code, Section 1331 and 1338A. We have jurisdiction under Title 28 United States Code, Section 1292A1. We review the district court's conclusions of law de novo and its ultimate decision to grant the preliminary injunction for abuse of discretion. Footnote. Kangaroo argues that the district court erred by failing to apply the heightened mandatory injunction standard. We disagree for the reasons the district court articulated. Rasta's motion for a preliminary injunction did not request all or substantially all of its relief in a way that the relief could not later be undone. And Rasta's preliminary injunction motion merely sought to maintain the status quo the parties agreed to in their stipulation of standstill. End of footnote. Section 3. Kangaroo claims the injunction should not have issued because Rasta is not likely to succeed on the merits of its copyright infringement claim. Footnote. The other three prerequisites for injunctive relief are not at issue. End of footnote. According to Kangaroo, Rasta does not hold a valid copyright in its banana costume. Whether Rasta's copyright is valid is a question of law, which makes our review plenary. Footnote. Registering a work's copyright within 5 years of the work's first publication entitles the holder to a presumption of validity. See Title 17 United States Code, Section 410C. A later filed registration may still be probative, though. Here, Rasta's certificate of registration lists a 2001 first publication date and a 2010 registration date, so it is not entitled to the statutory presumption of validity, though we may consider the registration's existence in our analysis. End of footnote. And we must remain, quote, cognizant of the Supreme Court's teachings that copyrights protect only expressions of ideas and not ideas themselves, end quote. We begin by analyzing whether non-utilitarian sculptural features of the costume are copyrightable by determining whether those features can be identified separately from its utilitarian features and are capable of existing independently from its utilitarian features. See Title 17 United States Code Section 101 and Star Athletica. We then consider whether the merger and sene-faire doctrines render the costume ineligible for copyright protection. We conclude that the district court did not err when it held that Rasta is reasonably likely to prove ownership of a valid copyright. Section 3A. Quote, a valid copyright extends only to copyrightable subject matter, end quote. Copyrightable subject matter means, quote, original works of authorship fixed in any tangible medium of expression, end quote. Originality is a very low bar, requiring, quote, only a minimal amount of creativity, end quote. Quote, works of authorship include pictorial, graphic, and sculptural works, end quote, which are, quote, two-dimensional and three-dimensional works of fine, graphic, and applied art, etc., end quote. Quote, and a work of authorship is, subquote, fixed in a tangible medium of expression when it is embodied in a, end of subquote, subquote, material object from which the work can be perceived, reproduced, or otherwise communicated, end of subquote, end quote. A special rule applies to useful articles, i.e., those which have, quote, an intrinsic utilitarian function that is not merely to portray the appearance of the article or to convey information. Without more, they may not receive protection as such. Instead, useful articles that, quote, incorporate pictorial, graphic, or sculptural features that can be identified separately from and are capable of existing independently of the utilitarian aspects of the article, end quote, may be eligible for protection of those features alone. Thus, separability analysis determines whether a useful article contains copyrightable features. A useful article's design feature, quote, is eligible for copyright if, when identified and imagined apart from the useful article, it would qualify as a pictorial, graphic, or sculptural work, either on its own or when fixed in some other tangible medium. So we ask two questions. One, can the artistic feature of a useful article's design, quote, be perceived as a two- or three-dimensional work of art separate from the useful article, end quote? And two, would the feature, quote, qualify as a protectable, pictorial, graphic, or sculptural work, either on its own or in some other medium if imagined separately from the useful article, end quote? The first requirement, quote, is not onerous. The decision-maker need only be able to look at the useful article and spot some two- or three-dimensional element that appears to have pictorial, graphic, or sculptural qualities. The second requirement, which is, quote, ordinarily more difficult to satisfy, end quote, requires, quote, that the separately identified feature has the capacity to exist apart from the utilitarian aspects of the article, end quote. And that separate feature, quote, cannot itself be a useful article or, subquote, an article that is normally a part of a useful article, end of subquote, which is itself considered a useful article, end quote. We do not focus on, quote, any aspects of the useful article that remain after the imaginary extraction, end quote, nor does the work's marketability or artistic merit bear on our analysis. Thus, the two-part inquiry effectively turns on whether the separately imagined features are still intrinsically useful. We have explained that we do not analyze each feature in isolation, instead a, quote, specific combination of elements, end quote, that gives a sculpture its, quote, unique look, end quote, could be eligible for copyright protection. Those combined features may include, quote, texture, color, size, and shape, end quote, among others, and it, quote, means nothing that these elements may not be individually entitled to protection, end quote. The Supreme Court in Star Athletica found the two-dimensional design patterns on cheerleader uniforms eligible for copyright protection. The uniform's utilitarian, quote, shape, cut, and dimensions, end quote, were not copyrightable, but, quote, the two-dimensional work of art fixed in the tangible medium of the uniform fabric, end quote, was. Imagining those designs apart from the uniform did not necessarily replicate the useful article, even though the designs still looked like uniforms. The Star Athletica Court also provided helpful examples addressing three-dimensional articles. First, it reaffirmed its decision in Mazur, which held that a statuette depicting a dancer intended for use as a lamp base was eligible for copyright protection. Second, the court noted that a replica of a useful article, for example, a cardboard model car, could be copyrightable, although the underlying article, for example, the car itself, could not. Finally, the court noted that a shovel, quote, even if displayed in an art gallery, end quote, still has an intrinsic utilitarian function beyond portraying its appearance or conveying information. So it could not be copyrighted even though a drawing of a shovel or any separately identifiable artistic features could. We too have observed that, quote, just because a sculpture is incorporated into an article that functions as other than a pure sculpture, does not mean that the sculptural part of the article is not copyrightable, end quote. Section 3b. Having articulated the legal principles that govern our analysis, we turn to the particular facts of this case. To begin with, Rasta's banana costume is a, quote, useful article, end quote. Footnote. We have noted that, quote, a costume may serve, aside from its appearance, to clothe the wearer. Star Athletica addressed cheerleader uniforms as useful articles, and Rasta concedes its costume is a useful article. End of footnote. The artistic features of the costume, in combination, prove both separable and capable of independent existence as a copyrightable work, a sculpture. Those sculptural features include the banana's combination of colors, lines, shape, and length. They do not include the cutout holes for the wearer's arms, legs, and face, the hole's dimensions, or the hole's locations on the costume, because those features are utilitarian. Footnote. The district court correctly found, quote, that the cutout holes are not, per se, a feature eligible for copyright, end quote, because they, quote, perform a solely utilitarian function, end quote. It went on, however, to list, quote, the location of the head and arm cutouts which dictate how the costume drapes on and protrudes from the wearer, as opposed to the mere existence of the cutout holes, end quote, among the copyrightable features. We disagree with that portion of the district court's analysis because we must imagine the banana apart from the useful, i.e., wearable, article. Rasta has not identified any artistic aspect to the hole's dimensions or locations except in relation to the wearer. The cutout hole's dimensions and locations on the costume are intrinsically useful, perhaps even necessary, to make the costume wearable like the, quote, shape, cut, and dimensions, end quote, of the cheerleader uniforms in Star Athletica. So they cannot be copyrighted. End of footnote. Although more difficult to imagine separately from the costume's, quote, non-appearance-related utility, end quote, i.e. wearability, than many works, one can still imagine the banana apart from the costume as an original sculpture. That sculpted banana, once split from the costume, is not intrinsically utilitarian and does not merely replicate the costume, so it may be copyrighted. Kangaroo responds that we must inspect each feature individually, find each one too unoriginal or too utilitarian in isolation for copyright, and decline to protect the whole. But Kay Berry forecloses this divide-and-conquer approach by training our focus on the combination of design elements in a work. And the Star Athletica Court did not cherry-pick the uniform designs, colors, shapes, or lines. It too evaluated their combination. Thus, the separately imagined banana, the sum of its non-utilitarian parts, is copyrightable. Kangaroo also contends the banana is unoriginal because its designers based the design on a natural banana. They ask us to hold that depictions of natural objects in their natural condition can never be copyrighted. This argument seeks to raise the originality requirement's very low bar, which precedent forecloses for good reason. A judge's own aesthetic judgments must play no role in the copyright analysis. The cases Kangaroo cites in its brief confirm that whether natural objects are copyrightable depends on the circumstances. Compare Satava v. Lowry, holding that a sculpture of a jellyfish was not copyrightable, with Kokiko Inc. v. Rodriguez Miranda, holding that several elements of a plush toy depicting a tree frog were copyrightable. The essential question is whether the depiction of the natural object has a minimal level of creativity. Rasta's banana meets those requirements. In furtherance of its argument that costumes depicting items found in nature can never be copyrighted, Kangaroo relies on Whimsicality Inc. v. Ruby's Costume Co. Whimsicality involved a company's misrepresentation of its costumes as only, quote, soft sculpture, end quote, on its application for copyright registration, without any indication, written or pictorial, that they could be worn. See Whimsicality. Unlike that case, here, the Copyright Office recognized that Rasta sought to copyright a costume and initially refused to register a copyright because it was a costume. Additionally, the Whimsicality Court imagined the costumes peeled away from their wearers as deflated piles of fabric, leaving nothing recognizable or original to copyright. Star Athletica does not allow that approach in this appeal. The three-dimensional banana sculpture that separability analysis requires us to imagine is not a crumpled pile of fabric. It is a recognizable rendering of a banana. Courts have not, as Kangaroo claims, quote, consistently found that costumes of natural items, such as bees and pumpkins, cannot be copyrighted, end quote. See also Animal Fair Inc. v. M. Fesco Industries, finding a slipper in the shape of a bear's paw copyrightable. Indeed, the Second Circuit focused its decision on Whimsicality's misrepresentation to the Copyright Office, and did not even reach the question whether costumes are an exception to the general rule that clothing is not copyrightable. In our view, the non-utilitarian sculptural features of this costume are just such an exception. Footnote: Kangaroo's reliance on the underlying district court decision in Whimsicality is also misplaced because that decision, though carefully reasoned, employed a separability analysis inconsistent with the analysis required by Star Athletica. End of footnote. We therefore hold that the banana costume's combination of colors, lines, shape, and length, i.e., its artistic features, are both separable and capable of independent existence, and thus are copyrightable. Section 3C. Lastly, Kangaroo invokes two copyright doctrines, merger and sine fair, to argue that the banana costume is ineligible for protection. Both arguments address the same question: whether copyrighting the banana costume would effectively monopolize an underlying idea, either directly or through elements necessary to that idea's expression. Because Congress has excluded, quote, any idea, procedure, process, system, method of operation, concept, principle, or discovery, end quote, from copyright protection, courts deny such protection when a work's underlying idea can effectively be expressed in only one way. Courts term this rare occurrence merger and find it only when, quote, there are no or few other ways of expressing a particular idea. And if copyrighting a design feature would effectively monopolize an underlying idea, procedure, process, etc., then the merger doctrine exists to deny that protection. Notably, merger, quote, is most applicable where the idea and the expression are of items found in nature or are found commonly in everyday life, end quote. But if copyright does not foreclose, quote, other methods of expressing an idea as a practical matter, then there is no merger, end quote. Here, monopolizing Rasta's banana costume would not effectively monopolize the underlying idea because there are many other ways to make a costume resemble a banana. Indeed, Rasta provided over 20 non-infringing examples. As the district court observed, one can easily distinguish those examples from Rasta's costume based on the shape, curvature, tips, tips color, overall color, length, width, lining, texture, and material. We agree and hold the merger doctrine does not apply here. Courts also exclude sine fair from copyright protection, which includes elements, quote, standard, stock, or common to a particular topic, or that necessarily follow from a common theme or setting, end quote. The doctrine covers, quote, those elements of a work that necessarily result from external factors inherent to the subject matter of the work, end quote. As with merger, the sine fair doctrine seeks to curb copyright's potential to allow monopolizing an underlying idea via features that are so common or necessary to that idea's expression that copyrighting them effectively copyrights the idea itself. For example, Mitel Inc. v. Ictel Inc., citing foot chases as a sine fair of police fiction. Here too, copyrighting the banana costume's non-utilitarian features in combination would not threaten such monopolization. Kangaroo points to no specific feature that necessarily results from the costume's subject matter, a banana. Although a banana costume is likely to be yellow, it could be any shade of yellow, or green, or brown for that matter. Although a banana costume is likely to be curved, it need not be, let alone in any particular manner. And although a banana costume is likely to have ends that resemble a natural banana's, those tips need not look like Rasta's black tips, in color, shape, or size. Again, the record includes over 20 examples of banana costumes that Rasta concedes would be non-infringing. The sine fair doctrine does not apply here either. Because Rasta established a reasonable likelihood that it could prove the entitlement to protection for the veritable fruits of its intellectual labor, we will affirm. End of Silvertop Associates, Inc. v. Kangaroo Manufacturing, Inc. Opinion by Thomas Hardiman. So I'm sure some people are wondering what gives me the authority to do a podcast such as this, and I'll tell you what that is. I wrote the Wikipedia article for Star Athletica. So every time you look at that to figure out what the hell the separability test is and what it means, even though that opinion is so tortured, you have me to thank for such clear and concise analysis. But in this case, it's really just disappointing. Like, this is kind of the semi-famous, at this point, wake of Star Athletica case. You know, because it's banana costumes, obviously. But Star Athletica is a fairly controversial landmark Supreme Court case that decided that certain designs on clothes could be copyrightable in certain circumstances as defined by a separability test that was intended to unify all the various different types of separability tests used by different circuit courts and ended up somehow muddying the waters even further, only not so much because the first part of this two-step separability test is not really a test, and the second part is so generic and vague that basically anything could be copyrightable under it. And so, just like Varsity Brands in that case, companies have started copyrighting 2D pictures of, you know, the clothes, and then using that to stop other people from making clothes that look like them. And even though the case talks about, you know, not copyrighting the cuts of the clothes and trying to make some utilitarian distinctions, it really just doesn't. And ultimately, Star Athletica had to stop making clothes that looked similar to the Varsity designs. I'm not aware. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't follow it super closely, but I'm not aware of any actual judge sat case that has said that Star Athletica applies and doesn't agree that this design on this item is copyrightable. I know the Copyright Office has used Star Athletica to deny certain work gloves designs, but that's the one I know, and that's the one that's included in the Wikipedia article. This case continues the trend in kind of laughable ways. This is a whole thing, and I'm not going to like try and summarize Star Athletica any more than that, but one of the images that the Star Athletica opinion wants you to come away with is that if you could have this design on a canvas as a painting and you wrapped it around a, some blank piece of clothing, then that design would be copyrightable as the two-dimensional or three-dimensional work, that being the painting. And it mentions three-dimensional in terms of a ceiling, like Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel, you know. And that being said, this is not that. This is a banana. And the lower court, in fact, I'm going to pull up the Star Athletica article because I quoted it. The lower court's examples of what elements of this design are copyrightable include A, the overall length of the costume. So I'd like to see every submission of a costume as a painting to the Copyright Office come with like a little legend in the corner that says what size it's going to be. B, the overall shape of the design in terms of curvature. This one makes sense in terms of Star Athletica, but it's very like begs the question a bit because like, yes, the ceiling on the Sistine Chapel is curved, but is the curve of the Sistine Chapel on which it's painted a copyrightable element of the Sistine Chapel? It's unclear, which means no. C, the length of the shape, both above and below the torso of the wearer. That is just how it sits on the body, and it's designed to be comfortable. They wouldn't put those in some random location where it wouldn't be wearable, you know? D, the shape, size, and jet black color of both ends. It's a banana. they have those things on the ends. That is just so obviously centerfare of the banana costume. Any generic drawing of a banana will do the Donkey Kong thing where both sides have some dark color, and I don't see any distinction there between, you know, brown or black. And in this case, it is black, but like, just what if it were pink, right? Would that be creative? And I know the opinion went on about how you're not supposed to take them individually and you're supposed to think about the whole, but forcing ourselves to consider the totality of the costume is this gigantic cop-out. It's just so inherently prejudicial towards the presumption of copyrightability of the work. It's like how if you put music onto a silent film, I don't feel like that should be copyrightable, although, you know, I'm sure somebody disagrees somewhere, but like, that can be good. It can be great. But that doesn't mean it has to be copyrightable. But that doesn't mean someone should be able to enjoin someone else from being able to do the same thing. But we assume that good work needs to be copyrightable. And it's prejudicial framing and, frankly, incorrect on its own terms. The location of the head and arm cutouts, which dictate how the costume drapes on and protrudes from the wearer, as opposed to the mere existence of the cutout holes, which this appellate court ignored because, obviously, just like C, that's the way that the costume is designed to be worn by the person. That's utilitarian. F, the soft, smooth, almost shiny look and feel of the chosen synthetic fabric. What? I'd like to see a submission of a painting matching this design sent into this copyright office with the plush on the, like, as embossing on the painting. That doesn't, that's not a graphical, that is a part of the material that it is made, you know, much like the curvature of the Sistine Chapel. It is, you know, it's super circular. G, the parallel lines which mimic the ridges on the banana in three-dimensional form. So if they mimic the ridges, then they're part of the cut. This is a bone of contention I have with Star Athletica, because if the design is taken away from the cheerleading outfit and has all the colors in all the same locations, and it's just you magically take the color out and you put it in exactly the same way, so you're looking at it at the same angle, that is just the cut of the dress. That is just the cut of the banana costume. And H, the bright shade of a golden yellow and uniform color that appears distinct from the more muted and inconsistent tones of a natural banana. No, it's just yellow. It's just a banana. You understand that this kind of frustrates me. And something that, you know, especially just kind of makes it worse for me is that Breyer's dissenting opinion is right there and has a coherent test that can be falsely, you know, that can be failed but can be won definitively. And I don't understand why they did this and why we're being punished for it by having somebody claiming the design of a very generic banana costume. As much as his opinion wants to talk about how it's, you know, protecting low art as much as it's protecting high art, this is ultimately an isolated decision that impacts a whole industry, and it's going to be the big players that are going to abuse it. You know, in like any copyright debate, we focus so much on the little guy, you know, the struggling artist who quote unquote needs copyright to survive. But then, you know, the stereotypical it's Disney comes in and monopolizes works and tries to shut down expression, create artificial demand for things that mean a lot to, you know, generations of people. And with clothes, you know, it's not even just, you know, consumption. People express themselves with these clothes beyond what the designers do. It's the second and third order effects of decisions like this. If they keep piling up in this way, if the case law keeps developing like this, it'll be terrible. I saw a lot of stuff from Meredith Rose and public knowledge before Star Athletica came out about cosplay, but I haven't seen any post Star Athletica cosplay literature, even though it seems like it would impact those directly. And definitely, if you know anything about that, let me know. If you know any articles about specifically that Star Athletica on cosplay, definitely let me know. But I mean, it's just that, you know, when you're changing the contours of a industry by, you know, adding some legal right that wasn't there before, I feel like you should really be considering this more. Like, Star Athletica changed fashion, you know. Can we just acknowledge that? If the fashion industry existed just fine without copyright, without this extremely low bar to copyrightability, if we are going to copyright them, then why couldn't it survive without it? But what do I know? I don't know. Anyway, if you'd like to have your scholarship read on this podcast, you can feel free to reach out to me at Amicus Lectio or at Lethargilistic, and I will definitely do it. Talk to you later. Bye.
Get him really close.
Fine.
Ah, super kawaii.
This is patronizing.
Win! Uh-huh, this my shit. All the girls dump your feet like this. It's bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-N. This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-N. This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-N. This shit.
Didn't ask. Damn.
Silvertop Associates versus Kangaroo Manufacturing, number 18-2266. I feel disappointed. I thought council might wear the bananas.
We brought them for you.
Okay, all right, we'll wear the bananas then.
Judge, there was a motion to hand up the costumes today so that they would be part of the record.
Didn't we grant the motion to use them?
I brought the costumes, so I just didn't know the procedure.
Well, you can take them out if you like. If it's part of your, it's always a two-edged sword with exhibits, because it does take away from your time, but it's up to you. You can use your...
Let the court can see what they want.
That would be fine. Thank you.
I'll pull one out there. They all kind of look very similar.
But we're not going to try them on, just so you know.